Today's Journey to Wellness in Indian Country is made possible by the University of Minnesota Medical School Duluth Campus, educating medical students dedicated to serving rural Minnesota and American Indian, Alaska Native communities. We've heard recently conversations that have been liberally sprinkled with the word decolonize. What does it mean to decolonize something? And one of the interesting things that came up in a conversation I had a while back with Christina Woods was the idea of decolonizing a museum. As some background information, she sent me a link to a fascinating article, and it really is. It's an interesting article. It's a fascinating topic. And to begin that work in our art museums seems like a no-brainer, but like we're standing on the cusp of something really exciting and making some really interesting discoveries. Christina joins us on the phone this morning to talk about it a little bit more. Hey, Christina, thanks so much for being here.
Well, good morning, and thank you for having me.
So let's talk about this idea just a little bit. First of all, does it matter? Well, obviously it matters to you very much, but does it? Mm-hmm. Is it important to establish in the context of the discussion that you have that you are a Native American?
I am Anishinaabe. I'm an enrolled member of the Boise Fort Nation in northern Minnesota.
So as we look at this idea of decolonizing, and the official definition given by the Washington Post is expanding the perspectives that museums portray beyond those of the dominant culture. And it was interesting to me to realize that many museums got their art collections originally through people who either were explorers and plundered other cultures, or made their money in a certain way and were able to buy up all of these excellent works of art because they were making so much money doing various, you know, nefarious things. Let's talk about the Duluth Art Institute in particular. And as you look around you and say, okay, what needs a little attention? How do you evaluate it? What do you look at first? And what strikes you?
Well, the number one thing is whose story is being told over and over and over inside of our gallery walls, inside of our classes, inside of anything that we're writing about art. So whose story is told and whose story is locked out? So I look through a lens of absent narratives. And, you know, I want to back up just a little bit and talk about what colonization is, because it's very simply stated that colonization is the effort that occurred probably due to the Columbian Exchange back in the 1600s, where travel around the world was occurring and the Eurocentric views were also traveling around the world and making comfortable the spaces that Eurocentric people were traveling into comfortable for themselves. So they were changing environments as they were starting, you know, the initial stages of globalization. And so colonizers have a habit of going into spaces and making them comfortable for themselves. And so looking through things through only their lens, looking at culture and attitudes as a comparison to what they know versus learning something completely new. And so to decolonize actually means to shift your thinking away from what you already know and not compare it to what you know, and to look at the world through a new lens.
That's a fascinating perspective, because even if you perhaps wouldn't call it decolonizing, there are a lot of people that we know that like to look at the world through their own lens and the lens that makes them comfortable. And mm-hmm. once in a while, whether it's a friend or a relative or a stranger that we meet, we kind of want them to look at, you know, hey, have you thought about looking at it this way? So from mm-hmm. that standpoint, we could all go out into our worlds and gently do a little decolonization, which is just
absolutely.
Kind of a marvelous concept.
Absolutely. And, you know, decolonizing a museum versus like the Duluth Art Institute, it's a little bit different in that we don't have the extra step of having to deal with a collection that we may have to repatriate back to the original cultures that it was stolen from. So we don't have a collection. But the other steps of decolonization involve the governance of an organization. Who's working and what is the understanding of the staff around a decolonized mindset and unconscious bias? Decolonizing the art that comes in or the artists that we show. And then also how we represent an exhibition. So that includes the didactics. What are we writing in the didactics? What's the language we use? Because words matter. Maybe you need to have a bilingual exhibition, and so you're explaining and telling the narrative in both English and another language like Anishinaabe, Mohin.
One of the things that I thought was so fascinating in this article was talking about an example from the Field Museum of Natural History in Chicago. And they had this Native North American hall that had been untouched since the 50s. And they asked some artists to come in and present their work. And they, the various Native artists, kind of gave context to all of these artifacts and all of the exhibits in this hall, and I can only imagine that the context that they were offering and the counterpoint that they were offering was a very different perspective than the one that people had been perhaps, you know, adopting since they trundled through the hall beginning in 1950. And so now they're not only going to redo that hall, but they have an advisory committee of scholars and different professionals and different Native viewpoints that are going to be represented as they reimagine this particular space. That sounds like something that the Duluth Art Institute could be doing also with the wealth of interesting and talented artists that we have in our community.
Absolutely, and that is a big step in decolonizing. In fact, for our 2020 calendar, have used a panel to help determine what themes we could be using for exhibitions. So it's decolonizing an organization really is based on the wealth of knowledge around you and being really open to ideas and perspectives that oftentimes don't mesh with what your idea of an exhibition should be. And having an advisory council or a group of people that help guide those discussions and bring in the context that many of us, and myself included, were exempt from learning in school, for instance, which is one of our most prolific areas of gaining knowledge for most of our life. And so many narratives are left out of history. And so we walk in the world without having a lot of information about cultures that belong to marginalized people. And so it's very, very important that museums and institutions, and like the Duluth Art Institute, that we're asking two main questions every time. What is the narrative that this exhibition is telling, and what narrative is locked out? So we start with those two questions with everything that we view. And it's not really about diversity, so, or having black and brown people on the board or in your committees. It's really about everybody being accountable for themselves with regards to their biases and understanding decolonization. And so we need all people to start reviewing their introspective selves and their social identity development, to be reaching out beyond what they're comfortable knowing and understand that the impact of biases in colonization has a very deeply negative, it's a very deeply negative experience for people of color and indigenous people. And so being able to ask those very two questions, initially. It's like, what story is being told and what story is locked out? So using the lens of absent narratives is the first step for the Duluth Art Institute.
I am excited about, and maybe that's part of a privilege that I get to be excited about it without, you know, the sense of this is a mixed blessing. But I'm excited about this in the sense that I see this next generation of young people that some of the big issues that my generation struggles with, they're like no-brainers to these people. A lot of these ideas about everybody sitting at the table and having a voice and looking at some of these absent narratives. So many of these sociological jumps, ideological jumps, young people are able to make, it seems, almost effortlessly. And I guess that's what has me excited, that laying this really good groundwork for them moving forward is going to make it such a more welcoming, such an easier, I hope, an easier world for people going forward?
I hope so as well. You know, I have spent the last year and a half, almost 2 years, with one mantra on my desk, and that is that art saves lives. And I have yet to hear a person dispute that or not share a story about how art has saved their lives. And so for me, as a leader in the art sector, the visual arts sector, it's really important that I stay focused on access and broadening access to the visual arts, both as artists, you know, and as viewers, and then additionally as patrons, collectors, and just people who can come in and engage with the art. It's a beautiful way to have a disagreement, because you can disagree on the art and it doesn't have to become personal. I have seen youngsters as young as first grade learning conflict resolution because they disagree on a piece of art.
Oh, I love it. I was mentally picturing fisticuffs in front of a piece of art. And I just couldn't quite get there. But people do. I mean, they love their opinions, but, mm-hmm. you know, maybe there is kind of an inherently civilizing effect that art has on people where they can disagree about perhaps music or art, as you mentioned, and manage to do it without, you know, brawling.
And it's true. I've created a program at the Duluth Art Institute called Commission Your Bias. And it is a course for folks who really are ready to apply the construct of race to their life and how it impacts people. They understand white privilege, and they know what white fragility is. And so we use a piece of controversial art that's very conflict-infusing, and we walk through what people experience with this piece of art. Now, the difference is I've been teaching basically these anti-bias courses for a long time, but I've been using my own personal stories. And so what happens when you use art is that now the white fragility goes away. People aren't feeling bad for me or apologizing for what their ancestors have done. Now we're really able to unpack biases and unpack prejudice and unpack many of these ideas around how people get stuck in their thinking and give some opportunity to challenge each person can challenge themselves to reach beyond their biases. So that's the power of art. We do this with a piece of art at the Duluth Art Institute versus my story, which is rooted in homelessness as a child and poverty. And so it brings people together for a better shared experience.
What an incredible way of approaching it and taking that defensiveness piece away.
Right.
Not that that isn't appropriate in some instances, but as you are trying to change minds and open people's ways of thinking, putting them on the defensive, making them put up the walls, making them feel under attack is obviously not always the best way to accomplish that. And this sounds like a genius way of getting at the squishy underbelly sometimes of the way.
That's a great way to put it.
The way mm-hmm. that we've been thinking about things. And I'm thinking about a porcupine in my mind because I got to know a porcupine. That's another story. Christina, thank you so very, very much for sharing with us this morning. I'm going to be fascinated to watch and learn how the process unfolds as the year goes on. Well, as the years, plural, go on. And I hope that we have the opportunity to talk about some of these topics again soon. Thanks so much.
Would love to. Thanks, Lisa.
Christina Woods joined us this morning. She is the curator of the Duluth Art Institute. Today's journey to wellness in Indian country is made possible by the University of Minnesota Medical School Duluth campus, a national leader in improving healthcare access and outcomes in rural Minnesota and American Indian, Alaskan Native communities.